guys, welcome back to our podcast, Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts.
Today we're going to talk about specifically what props are and some of the props that Eric and I have made and some fun stories to go with it.
Sounds good. Cool. So what is a prop?
Oh, goodness.
You know, so, this is kind of funny, but I have a definition of props in my book.
Okay.
And now people are using that definition and they're citing that book, and I'm kind of thinking, did I write a good definition? Is this what it is?
You're famous.
I think you have a pretty good analogy you use.
Yeah, I like to think of it as, say, you just built a house. You haven't moved in yet. It's just the house. The prop is, or props, is anything somebody brings into that house except for wardrobe. You know, picture frames, rugs, couches, little doilies, candlesticks, food. All of that is prop related in the theater world. In the film industry, a prop is anything an actor touches. Everything else that's on set is set dressing, which is a completely different department. For theatrical props, I like to think of it as whatever you bring in when you move into a brand new house.
So everything from the furniture, the rugs, the curtains, to everything you carry, your pen, your notebook, your guns and your swords, your weapons, your food, everything that they eat, everything that they drink.
All of it.
Umbrellas.
And oddly, outlets. I don't know if that's a thing. Every theater.
Light switches, outlets, radiators. So the moving into house analogy is pretty good. Other than
those items we just said.
And radiators and things like that. But you do have lighting fixtures. Anything that's basically seen as part of the world of the play as opposed to things that are a part of the theater or the front of house or anything like that.
Yeah.
And we do, there's a lot of weird, you know, boundaries between departments. So I know some places an umbrella will be a prop while a parasol is a costume.
Yeah.
And sometimes like a wristwatch will be costumes, but a pocket watch will be props. But you also find places where costumes has pocket watches, so they just take care of it. So any of these sort of like actor-driven, actor-worn props, they're always a gray line. I know some prop masters like to say if the actor does jumping jacks and it falls off of them, it's a prop. If it stays on them, then it's a costume. But there other theaters have more hard and fast rules, but yeah. It's the objects that are part of the world. I just heard a great quote that said a prop master is the director of the inanimate actors in a show.
Oh, I like that. That's pretty good. Yeah, I think my favorite is purses. You know, it's always like, it's a costume, it's a prop, it's a costume. And I like to think of if a costume designer has an opinion on something, it's a costume piece.
Right.
And we really do that at Yale. We're like, you have an opinion, then you're going to buy that and you're going to deal with that because not our thing.
Yep. If it's in the costume designer's rendering, then it's a costume.
Yes.
And like at my theater, you know, purses, it kind of comes down to purses are what costumes have in stock. And if you don't like them, you could look through props bags and then it's a prop, you know?
Yeah.
Whoever you borrow it from, that's what it is.
Yep.
It's like, ah, that's more of a bag than a purse. It's a prop. But those things are usually dealt with on a, you know, a show by show basis, a theater by theater basis. But there's a lot of things that are basically always a prop.
Yeah.
So this show, we're going to talk about some of our favorite props that we've built. Some of the most interesting things.
Because
you can't just buy everything. Sometimes you have to make it. And one of the things that we always have to make are body parts. Because most theaters don't allow you to use real body parts.
It's really a shame. So, I mean, it'd be so much easier, guys.
So, Ashley, you built a dead foot.
I did. this is one of my favorite projects that I've ever done. I casted a foot from one of my friends. I used Smooth-On's product Body Double. It gets off the skin very nicely. It gets a lot of detail. It's a silicone. And I filled it with Dragon Skin, which is another Smooth-On product. And I painted it. I airbrushed it, which it was the first time I've ever used an airbrush. I was shocked that it came out well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, you know what? This needs to be bloody. This needs to be a severed foot. And so I'm like putting all this blood and like little bone pieces coming out of the ankle. And it was great. It was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
The weird thing, though, was it was very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I filled it with this dragon skin, and because of how large it was, it became very, very weighty. And I think if I were to do it again, I would have put a foam, an expanding foam inside, mm-hmm. just to lighten it up. Because
mm-hmm.
I think it wasn't for a show. It was just a project. And if it was for a show, I think an actor would have said, you know, this is too heavy. I can't deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
Which happens a lot, guys. It happens a lot. And so, yeah, and I still have it. I put it out for Halloween. I take it when I do a workshop. I'm a horrible person, and I'll throw it at friends when mm-hmm. they come into the house and just, like, totally freak them out. But I took it on a subway once. That was good. Oh, that was, like, my favorite moment in mm-hmm. life. But yeah, it's so interesting doing body parts and just getting that detail.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my favorite part about mold making.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do all sorts of things. You know, there's a block mold, there's a glove mold, there's a two-part mold. You know, there's all these ridiculous types of molds you can do.
It's mm-hmm.
fascinating. And I've also done a few face castings, which has been great. I did a Vita once in Maine and had to create a Vita body.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually really funny because the actress, you know, you always put Vaseline on anywhere that there's hair.
Mm-hmm.
And just so it comes off a little bit smoother. And she didn't put enough Vaseline on her eyelashes.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, you need more, you need more. And she was freaking out. She's like, I don't want much. And I was like, okay, that's going to be your problem. And we were taking off the mold. And it was getting stuck to the eyelashes because she didn't put enough Vaseline.
Right.
She starts having like a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I won't have eyelashes. I don't have eyelashes. And she was convinced she had no eyelashes when that thing came off. And I like gave her a mirror and I was like, look, you're fine. There were like two that came off.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so funny. But yeah, it's a lot of fun doing life casting.
Yeah.
And you've done some stuff too, right?
I have. I've never actually done a face cast, surprisingly.
Oh, really?
Never done that. But I did do a hand.
Nice.
Very similar to how you did it. This was J.O. Saunders. He was playing Titus in one of our Titus Andronicus at the Public mm-hmm. Theater. And so there's, you know, he chops off his hand and they have a hand and he was going to put it in his mouth. So it needed to be silicone or something that was like mouth safe. So they were rehearsing uptown. I forget where. It wasn't the 42nd Street Studios they always use, but it was somewhere in the 30s or something. And we're down, mm-hmm. you know, on 8th Street at the Public Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So I had like a small window during rehearsal where I could take his hand cast. So I gathered up all my supplies. I was going to use alginate, which is you know, it's a powder that you mix with water and it sets up. It's I think it's seaweed based or algae based or something. Seaweed based.
I think it's, yeah.
And then so you mix it up. The actor puts their hand in it for like 5 to 7 minutes and it hardens. And then you have like an hour or two before it starts shrinking. So you kind of have to cast mm-hmm. it pretty quick. So I took the supplies up, like everything ready to go. All I needed up there was a sink. He came out, he sat down, you know, made him comfortable. And then he, you know, stuck his hand into this warm goo and sat there for 5 minutes as it kind of hardened around him. And then when it was hard, he like pulled it out and it's like, okay, that's great. Thank you. And so I mixed up some plaster like right there in the rehearsal hall and mm-hmm. and filled the mold with plaster. And then mm-hmm. I had to head back down to the Public Theater. So I have this bucket which is a mold of J.O. Saunders' hand filled with plaster that is setting up in the subway as I'm writing down. And so when I got back to the shop, the plaster was set up. So I now had a plaster version of his hand and did a silicone mold of that. It was a brush-on mold. I think it was smooth-on rebound or whatever their brush-on mold-making thing is. And then I had a permanent mold because the alginate, you know, basically disintegrates after a day or so. And I did dragon skin as well, filled that into the brush-on mold. To make his hand. And I had, you know, some wooden bones inside of there too, so that they could sort of stick out the end. It was kind of like that. The silicone itself was tinted when I cast it, so it was kind of vaguely skin color to begin with. And then again, just kind of like painting it on with their silk pigments. And I had a little hand. And it was, it was exciting because it was, one of the photographs showed up in the New York Times arts section on the front page of that section. And that was like that was the very last project I did at the Public Theater before moving down to North Carolina. So I got, you know, a picture in the New York Times of one of my props as
nice,
basically like a going away present for myself.
Now, was there a reason that you decided to do alginate instead of just using body double?
I don't know that I worked with body double or even heard of it at that point. I know there's a really great store in New York City called The Complete Sculptor where you could just walk in and buy any of this stuff, smooth on stuff, plasters, alginate, things like that. So you could just go in and you could buy alginate. And I knew it was safe on the skin. I knew it was fast. Because I needed, you know, I needed it to be able to be whipped up fast and that sort of thing. And it's, you know, it's pretty clean too. It's water-based. If it gets anywhere, it's non-toxic. It's fine, that sort of thing. But I think, honestly, it was mostly I just hadn't heard of body double at that point. So I didn't know there was like a skin-safe silicone.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Dead hands.
Right?
Dead body parts.
Body parts.
I had we also did a bunch of heads for the Bacchae. This was back in 2009, and that was dragon skin. And I was actually I got married in the middle of that show, so I was on my honeymoon when they did the live cast of Anthony Mackie's face, who now plays Falcon in all the Marvel movies. So I missed being able to take his face cast. But I got to be able to cast his face and make up all these heads. And really great things. I got them all over my website. But one of the assistant directors on that show later on, he needed a head. And so he reached out to me because he knew I did them. And it was a small theater, and so he said, how much for a head? And I gave him this quote, and he's like, what can you do for cheaper? And I figured something else out, and he's like, what else can you do? So I was like, well, I could buy a Halloween mask and paint it skin color and fill it. He's like, I love it. So I went out. It needed to be a severed head of Medusa, and I went out, and I found a Beetlejuice wig. A Beetlejuice mask and a bunch of snakes. And so I filled it with expanding foam so it became solid, and I painted it skin color, and I, you know, stuck some like bloody guts coming out of the neck and wired all these snakes on and gave it to him. And he loved it because it was the price he needed it to be at. So there's always more than one way to make a prop. You don't have to life cast somebody and cast him out of smooth on dragon skin products. You can always paint a Halloween mask.
So true. I mean, there's cheap ways to do everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just depends on, you know, how are you wanting it to look like in the end?
Yeah. Especially with, like, especially around Halloween time. I know a lot of shows I've done where I need like hands and feet. There's these cheap Halloween versions that you could buy, and they're so much cheaper than you're ever going to be able to make them for because they're mass producing them. So it's just like, give me a hand, give me a bucket, give me a bucket of body parts. That's what I need.
It's good. It's fun stuff, guys. And do you also, I know I do some faux taxidermy, and I know you've done a little bit of taxidermy, but what kind of favorite projects in that element have you done?
Oh, yeah, dead animals are always tricky. I've done some stuff that's been good. I've done some stuff I've not been happy with. Timon of Athens, and they come in from the hunt and they have these dead rabbits, and it was very low budget. So I thought what you could do is buy stuffed animal rabbits and treat mm-hmm. them to look like real rabbits. So I'm there, I'm like trying to shave down the fur, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm like adding weight to them so their limbs are weighted and things like that. And we get them out on stage in rehearsal, and the director's like, "So are we going to use stuffed bunnies for the real show?" Like, there was nothing, I mean, there was nothing I could do to make them actually look real. I was kind of deluding myself that you could turn a toy stuffed rabbit into a real dead rabbit. So that, I never tried that again.
I hear you.
Yeah, it's like the proportions and the skin mm-hmm. and the fur, it's all completely wrong. It's wrong, wrong, wrong. So yeah, I did end up, after I moved down to North Carolina, I went back to New York for a summer, and I did a dead deer for the Shakespeare in the Park. And that was a pretty intense project because it was, we started off with a bit of a taxidermy form, which I kind of chopped up and made flexible, like added joints in it, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Because they were going to be carrying it around. And we got a few deer hides that I sort of started stitching together to kind of cover this whole thing. You know, like the main part is really easy, but then you have to start wrapping it around the legs and mm-hmm. the neck and figuring out how to make a seam in in fur, make yeah. it look natural. But like working with a real hide is so much better because there's all those little variations in terms of like the direction of the fur and all the different color and how it changes mm-hmm. color on the underside as opposed to the top of it and that sort of thing. And we had real deer hooves as well. So it was kind of just like piecing together this whole thing and getting it all good. And you did a deer as well. How did you do yours?
I have done a deer. This was my first very large project and I had no idea what I was doing. So it didn't come out amazing. We had a reindeer form in our stock. Mm-hmm. So I took that, and it was supposed to be a female deer. So I took off the antlers, and I took off all the fur, and of course the joints had to move and everything. Mm-hmm. So I made that mobility, and the neck had to move as well. And we also bought deer hides, which looking back, I don't think I would do again because that thing shed so badly. Mm-hmm. I mean, my coworkers today found hair like, couple years afterwards, and they would text me pictures, and they're like, "Why? Mm-hmm. Why would you do this?" Mm-hmm. And like you were saying, you know, there's all this sewing, and you're trying to patch it together in the seams and line up the hairlines. But I had a huge trouble with the covering the joints and like the hips mm-hmm. and shoulders. So it didn't really look good. It was more like a flap instead of mm-hmm. a very clean cut.
Right.
But the director was so happy, which was good. And the designer was happy. And it also had to have real blood all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And we took some rice and put it on its belly so it looked like little maggots, which was like really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But that poor deer was just destroyed with all the blood it did every night.
Right.
But it was definitely a learning experience and really fun, and started my interest in faux taxidermy.
Mm-hmm.
And from then I started, you know, I've been doing a lot of taxidermy since then. And I think my favorite project that I've done was a dead rooster.
Mm-hmm.
It was for a show at Yale. I have no idea what the name of the show was. It was a good show.
But memorable show.
Seven guitars. Okay. That's what it was. And so they wanted this rooster, and we borrowed a rooster from Juilliard when they did the show.
Mm.
And it wasn't, you know, it was maybe like 12 inches, 14 inches long. And the director said, "I want it a third of the size bigger."
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, you know, I'm sketching, I'm measuring it out. And I build it, and I get a real wings and feathers and stuff to put over it. Mm-hmm. I casted a rooster's head that was more rubber because it had to fall on the floor. Mm-hmm. We didn't want it to break. And I put it together and I'm like, this is 3 times bigger than what he said. It was so large, but they loved it. And what happened in the show is the actor took a knife and cut off its head, mm-hmm. and then poured blood out of it.
Right.
So I had a blood packet in its chest, mm-hmm. and a tube that went up its neck, and the head had a cork in it, mm-hmm. that corked the tube. And it was just like, it was very exciting and I loved it. And it was funny because the actors were looking at it and they're like, this looks really real. And they were like, is this a real, like, feathers? And I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, I got real feathers.
Right.
There was this, and I think one of the actors was like a vegan or something. Oh, she no. was like kind of offended. Mm-hmm. I was like, but it looked so cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was so much fun. It was great. It was a good time. Mm-hmm.
And did you have to put any of the feathers on individually, or were you able to find like a full hide?
Yeah, so I found a full hide that was the back and the wings, mm-hmm. and I created a muslin body, mm-hmm. and I painted it with latex, and then I painted the wings and the back with latex and stuck it on because latex sticks to latex. Mm-hmm. And then I found some more real feathers that I individually put, you know, around the legs, right. and a little bit on the mm-hmm. sides. And then I found a fake feather kind of patch that just laid on its belly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and it held together. I was shocked. I thought for sure it was going to, like, feathers were going to come off. But, you know, they were rough with it and nothing happened. It was pretty remarkable. I was pretty shocked. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dead animals are always tricky.
Mm-hmm. Especially when they want them to bleed. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always blood. They're like, we need blood in this show. And you're like, we didn't budget that. And it's a day before tech.
Yeah, I had to do a dead pheasant once. It was very similar. It was like a muslin body. Mm-hmm. And then I think I found one or two kind of hides, but there was a lot of like gluing on, not necessarily individual feathers. I think I found hackle pads, which are used maybe for hats or something like that. They're little pads that have a few feathers already attached to them. Mm-hmm. So you kind of like put a couple of those on and you don't have to deal with the individual feathers. And then, you know, it was a pheasant, so really long tail feathers and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I also ended up doing like just fur around the legs instead of trying to deal with these tiny feathers. It's like this looks like it enough. You know, if you're looking at the pheasant legs in this scene, then there's a bigger problem with the show.
very true.
Yeah. We had another show. We were doing Arms and the Man, and there was a scene in the library and they wanted taxidermy everywhere, so I'm trying to find all this taxidermy. It was like a giant moose head or an elk or something, and then just like, you know, a possum and you know, all these things. And I was able to find a bunch of it on eBay, you know, because you could just buy a possum mounted possum face and put it on stage. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I couldn't find was a coyote. I don't know if there's something about like people don't taxidermy coyotes or something like that, but I was able to find some small, like a fox skull or something like that, some small canine like creature skull and a coyote face. And I had my apprentice, this was her first show at this theater, and it was kind of her first project, and I'm giving her this skull and this face, and I'm telling her to make a coyote out of it. And it probably, you know, since she didn't run from that project, I knew she was going to survive the rest of the year. But we now have this time, you know, this like
this
weird Frankenstein coyote head in our stock. It's always slightly freaky and slightly morbid. But then, you know, you find those websites where they have the Victorian taxidermy, where they have like cats playing croquet, and you're like, all right, I'm not doing this, so I'm at least ahead of them.
There's a part of me that actually wants to make those. They're just so weird.
The little mice scenes, mouse domestic scenes.
They're so great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of morbid stuff.
That's so true. It's so true.
That's kind of where the title of our show came from, because you have, you know, paper mache hearts, but you also have silk flowers. There's always like, in any given day, you could be doing glitter and you could be doing blood. You could be doing, you know, fancy crafts and horrible dead body parts.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to be doing. Mm-hmm, it's crazy, which I think is what a lot of us love about it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not doing the same thing. You're not doing like same kind of concept. It's, you never know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Keeps you on your toes.
That's so true. Yeah. And anytime, if you don't like the show you're working on, a couple of weeks, you'll be working on a different show.
Yeah. That's, you know, a lot of people have jobs that they work with people they don't like. And we're very lucky to be in the theater world where you don't like somebody. Couple weeks later, you're done with them. Mm-hmm. You don't have to work with them again. You're like, bye, you know,
until they come back for the next season. You're like, oh hello true. Again.
And they're like, oh my gosh, you're my best friend.
No, usually you forget by the time the next show runs around, you forget like why you didn't like somebody. You're like, okay, this person's all right, okay.
It's so true. And then like, bam, and they're like, oh, okay. All right, guys, I think that's another end to an episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Follow us on Twitter at Silk Mache, and check out our website, silkflowersandpapermachehearts.com, to get updates, listen to our podcast. And if you have any questions, thoughts, ideas or anything, something you want us to cover in Props World, send us an email at propspodcast@gmail.com.
Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes.
It's going
to
be great, guys. Yeah. All right. We'll see you next time. All right. Bye. Bye.